Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are introducing a new company to the show. However, I know that a lot of our listeners already follow along with this company. Company is Generation Mining, traded on the TSX under the symbol GENM and on the OTCQB under the symbol GENMF. Shad and I are chatting with the executive chairman and director, Carrie Knoll. Now, the company is focused on the Marathon project in Ontario, which is already at a feasibility stage. It is a platinum, palladium, gold, and copper project. The feasibility study, that's where we're going to start, was released at the very beginning of March this year. We have a base case IRR of 30%, after-tax NPV of over $1 billion, 2.3-year payback. This is done at palladium prices of $17.25 and copper prices of $3.20. We move that up to spot prices. The IRR goes to 47% and the after-tax NPV goes to over $2 billion. Carrie, let's start off with this feasibility study. Please summarize some of the other key points and outline the stage of this Marathon project in terms of potentially getting into production here.
Okay, so thanks for having me on. The first thing I want to point out about the feasibility study is who did it. We used two of the best engineering firms in the business for this feasibility study, and a lot of companies would be afraid of these guys because they're usually the big mine builders. They're building, you know, mines like the big Malartic mine or the Fruta del Norte mine in Ecuador, and that's a company called G Mining out of Montreal and another company, an international company called Ausenco, and that's who we used for the feasibility study. So it's, first of all, a very, very top quality study. It was based on a 15 banks consensus palladium price of about $17.25 an ounce. And as you guys know, I think that the palladium price is about well over $1,000 higher than that currently. So it's a pretty conservative number. And that's the base case net present value that you mentioned earlier. So this mine is, as you mentioned, a 13-year mine life. It's at the base case numbers, the palladium is by far the biggest contributor. About 58 or 59% of the revenue will be coming from palladium and about 27% from copper. What's interesting is at today's copper price, that copper number goes up substantially, probably to about 35 or 40%. So it's starting to become a co-product instead of a byproduct. What's also interesting about today's copper price is that the copper production would pay all of the operating costs. And that's the secondary metal in the deposit. So the palladium would all come out for free as well as the platinum and gold, which is a pretty good situation to be in, especially at a time when I think the majority of analysts out there think that copper is going to be certainly higher than the $3.20 number that we used in the feasibility study in the years going forward.
So, Carrie, in terms of this project stage compared to other, let's say, palladium projects in Canada or even around the world, from my understanding, this is one of the, if not the most advanced undeveloped project. Can you take us through how it compares to other projects, please?
Well, in North America, there's no other projects at the feasibility stage. There's one project the company is doing a pre-feasibility study. It's a smaller project and lower grade than ours, but at today's prices, it'll, you know, probably look pretty good. So we're the only one in North America, and there's one other one in South Africa that is at the feasibility stage, and it's also it's a pretty good looking project. It's bigger than ours, but it's deep and it's a long, you know, it's a long lead time to get that one into production. So the nice thing about ours is being an open pit mine, we can be into production about 18 or 20 months after we start construction, which we intend to do as soon as we have our permits in place, which we are hoping is going to be next year. And we're doing all the right things to get that happening next year. But of course, we're at the mercy of the governments in that.
So what's the status then? How does this project move forward through construction? Any estimates you can give our listeners, please?
So the Here's the next year is going to look like this. It's we're doing three major things. The first one, of course, is the permitting. That's the most important thing, and we're doing that. It'll be through the next year, and we hope to have our environmental impact statement approved within a year, and then our permits applied for and granted. The second thing that we need to do this year is to do what's called detailed engineering. So you don't just start building a mine, because you need to do the engineering first. So we're going to be doing the detailed engineering starting a little bit later this year. We've gone out to tender to five major engineering firms to quote on that, and we've got the quotes in, and we're examining the quotes, and we'll be making a decision probably in July about who's going to be doing that work for us. And that's about a $20 million number, give or take. Some are higher, some are lower, but that also includes there's going to be some additional money set aside for ordering long lead time items. So some of the equipment we need, the mining equipment and the ball mills, you don't just buy those off the shelf. You have to order them well ahead of time and put a down payment on them. So we're going to be doing that towards the end of this year as well. So those are kind of three of the things that we want to do. And of course, the other one is to line up the financing for the mine itself. The capital cost is about $665 million, plus we're going to need some working capital. So what we plan to do for that is the bankers have indicated to us that we've got probably can get a minimum of 60% and possibly as high as 70% in debt on this project, some of that possibly being a secondary debt at a bit of a higher rate. And the other thing that is really attractive about this project is that we have some byproducts. We have some gold, we have a little bit of silver, and we also have some platinum that are not key to the revenue stream. And we can look at, and we've actually got tabled offers by a number of companies on selling a stream of the minor byproduct metals. And we can use that as part of our capital costs. And we're talking about upwards of $200 million in stream financing for this project. So that would go a long way. So what we're trying to do, obviously, is keep the equity portion of this to a minimum. And then the third one is we've had a lot of interest by these private equity companies wanting to take a small stake in the mine. And that might generate some secondary debt and some other fees as well. And so we've got all these different balls in the air as part of our financing strategy. We're not afraid of the amount of money. I mean, there's probably never been a time in history that so favorable to mine financing, and especially to the metals we have, because they're all considered strong ESG metals, both platinum and palladium and also copper, I guess, are on both the Ontario government and the federal government's critical minerals list. Both of those lists were only published for the first time in March. And it's because those metals are all needed for a clean, greener world. And that's why they're on there. So it's a good time. A lot of companies, finance companies, can only invest in companies that have some kind of statement to make in the ESG space. And so we fit that bill for a lot of companies.
Yeah, Kerry, the ESG space is definitely top of mind for many investment firms and for many investors. And it's nice that you have options either through debt or through the streaming or through even strategic stakeholders, which kind of brings up a point. If anybody's been following along with your company, there's a particular potential strategic stakeholder that I'd like to get an update on, and that is Sibanye has the right to back into this project at 51%, and sometime in the next month or two, has to come to a decision on if they're going to back in, if they're going to walk away from the project, or if they may even be interested in taking you over. So I know there's a lot of questions in the marketplace around the Sibanye transaction, and I know you don't know which way they're leaning at this point, but could you walk us through how the company feels about each of those three outcomes and how you would proceed and move forward?
Yeah, so they just to give a bit more background, they have to spend, they have to pay us or pay the joint venture 31% of the CapEx in order to get back to this 51%. If they do that, That's a check they're going to have to write for in excess of $200 million. What that does for us is it pushes us back to 49%, but that $200 million, in our opinion, would be most of the equity required for this project. And so we wouldn't have to put up a lot more money. We'd be carried for 49%, we think, for all the way through to production, and we'd have a good size mine to show for it, a 49% interest in one of the top 10 precious metal mines in Canada. So that's not a bad position to be in after we've only invested about $20 million into the project, and and it's going to have a net present value of $1 billion. So having 49% of that for $20 million is a pretty good deal. So that's one scenario that may happen. Another scenario is that Sibanye might decide, for whatever reason, this mine is too small for them. Don't forget, they're a $15 billion company. And they also have not built mines in the past. They've only acquired mines. So they may decide this project isn't for them, which would make us happy, because we think that financing this and building this mine will be just a phenomenal outcome for our shareholders, because we would obviously have one of the top 10 precious metal mines in Canada, and it's got a year and a half payback at today's prices. So in a couple of years, we'll own it 100%, and with a good long life ahead of it. So that would be an exciting move. And of course, the third scenario is if Sibanye decides they want it all and they were to take us over, which of course would be at some kind of premium to today's price. We're not able to speculate, though, at this time, what exactly they're going to do. We have a bit of an office pool on what people think is going to happen, because they've held their cards pretty close to the chest, and they haven't really indicated what they plan to do.
Understood. It's just I thought it was helpful for the audience to bring them up to speed on the different options that can happen, and you know, fairly short order. So we'll be keeping our eyes on that and updating people as the news comes out. But one other thing we should note is that just as an ongoing process, you have an 8,000-meter drill program underway. So you're continuing to grow and expand the resources and do infill drilling and do some exploration drilling. Could you maybe bring us up to speed on where things are at in that drill program and how things are going?
Yes, for the last 2 years, we've been following what is called the feeder zone. So this deposit was formed by volcanic magma coming from obviously a lot deeper in the earth. This is like a billion years ago. And that magma came up some kind of a tube or a fissure in the earth. And that's what we call the feeder zone. And so the way geology works is you would usually anticipate that the grades in the feeder zone would be a little bit higher than in the main deposit. And there's a bunch of geological reasons why that would be. So we figured that this feeder zone had to exist, and we started drilling for that early in 2019 in the fall of 2019. And we hit it. We discovered the feeder zone, which is interesting because the previous owners had been looking for it for some time and hadn't been able to locate it. So we found it. And as we thought, the grades are higher. The grades are four or five times higher than in the deposit itself. Now, this is deeper, so it's going to be underground mining. But the idea is that towards the second half of the mine life, when we're mining the highest grade first, so the second half of the mine life, the grades are going to be a little bit lower, and we can supplement that low grade with some higher grade underground ore. And when I say higher grade, it's about twice the grade of the only operating palladium mine in Canada, which is an underground mine called North American, or called Black Basil. Used to be owned by North American Palladium. And so that mine is running about 2 to 2.5 grams, and we're finding around 5 grams underground. So we just think that it's an important discovery we've made, and it's not part of the feasibility study, but we expect it sometime in the future that this material will be mined and blended with the lower grade ore from the open pit.
So, Kerry, I guess summarize then the overall strategy or goals around that 8,000 meters, please. What do you hope to get out of that?
Well, we're hoping to get enough drilling into that feeder zone and to start to have a resource, a bare bones resource, an inferred resource. You know, you need a certain spacing to do that and enough drill holes. And we're hoping that the end of this program will give us that. We're also testing a couple of other zones in the vicinity. There was a hole drilled in 2006 that was a very good hole, and it hasn't really been followed up on. So we're going to be testing around there as well, looking to extend the deposit further to the north. So there's a couple of different areas. We're also prospecting. There's major parts of this system. This is a 25 kilometer long system of volcanic activity, and whole sections of it have never been prospected because the access is very, very difficult. It's very cliffs everywhere, and hills and steep climbs, and nowhere you can land a helicopter. So we drove a road in to parts of it last year, and we've got a crew in the field right now, and they're mapping and sampling it and seeing what you know, if there's indeed some additional deposits. There's already three deposits on the property. We're seeing if we can find any more.
Okay, so it sounds like there's still growth potential here on the resource, even though it's already so de-risked. So a little bit of that exploration as well. Wrap us up then, Kerry, quickly, just with a summary of news flow. What should investors be paying attention to as we progress through, let's say, the rest of this year, or at least the next quarter?
So there's going to be a lot of milestones happening this year. There will be, for the rest of this year, there will be, of course, the Sibanye decision. That'll be followed by, we'll be announcing some various milestones in the financing of the mine. There probably won't be too many announcements on the permitting until 2022, but we'll expect those to be coming during the first half of next year. And then of course, the exploration results as well. So we've got sort of four different areas where we're expecting. I think a lot of the market feels that a company our size is going to have trouble financing this mine. I don't agree with that assessment. And I think as we announced that some of the big name banks and streaming companies are coming on board, that they'll see that this is totally a financeable project.
Okay. Well, Kerry, we appreciate this introduction and update. If anybody has any follow-up questions for Kerry regarding Generation Mining, please email us either fleck@kereport.com or shad@kereport.com. We're also going to follow up, especially on the back of whatever that decision is from Sibanye and its option. So definitely keep an eye out for that update. But in the meantime, send us all of your questions. Kerry, appreciate this introduction and update. Thank you for your time today.
I appreciate it as well. Thanks.